This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted, neutral, global forum for healthcare product development. DIA, driving insights to action. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA's Global Forum magazine. Early access and real-world evidence and data generation are just two of the high-level challenges facing European healthcare and regulatory systems. DIA's Euromeeting 2017 in Glasgow, Scotland, will discuss these challenges and ways to approach them in various forums. These include the Diamond Session titled Major European Regulatory Science Challenges, which will be co-chaired by Dr. Karl Brosch, President, Federal Institute for Drugs and Medical Devices in Germany, the BfArM. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Brosch.
Yeah, you are welcome.
How will real-world evidence and artificial intelligence improve regulatory decision-making in Europe, and when?
Yeah, thank you. Real-world evidence, as we have it today, has clear limitations, and many people from a methodological point question that it ever will work. However, big data and new analysis tools using artificial intelligence or machine learning and all these other tools will change our view on this. As regulators, we have to adapt to these developments, and we are working on terms, definitions, and methods how we can do that. I believe that real-world research and planned intervention, randomization will be compatible tools, and that it will help in the future for a better benefit-risk assessment in addition to our usual randomized controlled trials.
Is real-world evidence an alternative to randomized controlled trials, or is it thought to be a joint effort with RCTs?
Yeah, I think this is a joint effort, and they will complement each other in future clinical development plans, particularly if we are discussing early access for patients.
Recent technological advances include the omnipresence of digital communications and social media. What has social media made better, or possibly what has it made worse, for regulatory science in the European Union?
Well, in the future, social media in many aspects might help. They might help us to find earlier signs or signals for pharmacovigilance issues. I'm pretty sure that they will challenge our recruitment for clinical trials as we do it today. So we have seen that by some large companies, particularly from the U.S. And here at the BfArM, recently we organized several workshops regarding the chances and risks of medical apps, for instance. When they need a CE sign as a medical device or not, and so on. So this is a highly dynamic field, but we as regulators are catching up, and I think we will see many activities in the future in this area.
When we think about digital communication, we also think about wearable devices. What is your view of the future of wearable devices as sources of data that might inform regulatory science and decision-making?
Yeah, I think they will be very helpful tools. So, of course, there are some quality issues. Are they measuring what we want? How is the validity of these tools? But they will really challenge our decision-making in the future and how we do in clinical trials.
Does the BfArM have any particular programs or initiatives around wearable devices and how to use the data that come from those?
Yes. Last week we promoted in Berlin in a press conference a new innovation bureau which would particularly deal with young companies, small academic centers, start-up centers who are dealing with such wearables and to provide scientific advice and particularly regulatory advice to them how they should develop their tools and wearables that they can be used in clinical trials so that they fit with our quality requirements. So it's our intention to help them to get to the market, but they do it in the right steps.
Moving to access to medicines as a topic, what lessons have already been learned from the European Union's tools and programs for early access to medicines? Are these programs working as intended?
Well, adaptive pathways and the priority medicines initiatives are important opportunities for early access in clearly defined situations. All the regulatory tools we need are already available, and they are used, and they can be managed from our side in our EU system. So however, we are in a learning system here, and we will adapt it as necessary. Our experience has been presented at a recent EMA workshop, so we will clearly follow that path, we are well aware that the public, the patients, all the stakeholders are expecting from us that we can deal with early access for patients, particularly if we look to the new developments in oncology with all the new immunology treatment options we see there. I think there are responder rates which make it clear that we need early access programs in these indications.
Conversations about patient access to innovative therapies in the EU most frequently focus on the R&D, regulatory, and reimbursement processes. But are there any additional social, cultural, or political pressures on patient access to these therapies in the European Union?
Yeah, I think there are many activities that we should bring innovative therapies faster to the patients. So there are some activities from the European Commission, from national governments, and we as regulators on the national and the EU level have taken this on board. I think one very important thing is that the patient's perspective in itself is more and more important for us. Therefore, we are including now patient representatives in our regulatory framework on a regular basis. One good example is the IMI Prefer project. It looks at how and when it is best to include patient preference in the decision-making process. So in the EU as well as on the national level, views are already included in different stages of our regulatory work. In particular, at BfArM, we are including now patient views in our assessment when we are RUP or CoRUP in centralized procedures at the EMA. So I think these challenges have taken on board.
Can you give us some insight as to how the patient voice is brought into these processes? Is it a single patient? Is it a patient association? Is it a focus group of patients? How does this happen in practice?
For instance, we supported the IMI project on EUPATI to have more and more patient representatives with good knowledge available. And here on the national level in Germany, we are using patient representatives from associations so that we have a clear view where are they coming from, are there maybe conflict of interest, and all these issues, and are they really representative for this indication we are discussing then? And then when we are ready with our first assessment as RAP or co-rapporteur, then they get our assessment report, and then we are discussing with them, are we assessing here the right match of primary and secondary endpoints, is quality of life addressed as you would see it as a patient, and so on. And then we will implement that to our final assessment report and bring that in then on the European level.
In recent years, patient groups have complained that drug developers have focused on endpoints in clinical studies that actually do not matter very much to the patients themselves. Do you concur with that view, and are these recent actions addressing that concern from patients?
That is one of the main reasons that we are discussing now more and more with patients, in particular with the different approaches of health technology assessment. Patient-reported outcomes are more and more important for us as regulators as well, so that we can address both requirements. Our hard endpoints we are used to for many years now, but we take into consideration as well all these new questions regarding quality of life, if we are talking oncology, for instance, or some central nervous system disorders like multiple sclerosis.
Since we are on the topic of major European regulatory challenges, I have to ask you, what are your thoughts about Brexit at this time?
I think uncertainty about the future of EMA and its consequences for our regulatory network is clearly there. Will EMA move? Where will EMA will move? And all these other questions. I think personally, colleagues of the MHRA did a great job in the network, and it would be a big loss with a so-called hard Brexit if we lose this expertise in the network. However, as head of BfArM and one of the largest national competent authorities, I can tell you that we will provide additional resources to deal with the consequences of Brexit. So we will help EMA no matter what political decisions will be made. I think our EU network is well established, and we will do everything that our EU patients will get efficacious and safe medicinal products or medical devices. So that's our job, and we will provide that.
Do you think that Brexit could be damaging to patient prompt access to medicines in some way across the European Union?
I don't think so for the time being. I think the network is strong enough to deal with the expectations and problems which might come up. However, as I told you, we are already building up our resources to deal with that.
Finally, going back to the Diamond session that you will co-chair at the Euro meeting in Glasgow, what new insight or idea do you hope that participants will take away from this session?
I think if you attend the meeting, you will learn about early access of innovative products, that we have all our regulatory tools available. However, you will see as well that we have to improve our methodology and find ways of real-world evidence in addition to our usual randomized controlled trials. So in this session, you can learn about recent developments in the EU and see examples how to deal with real-world data and what we can expect from them.
Those are all my questions. Thank you very much again for joining us today, Dr. Brosch, and have a good day.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're welcome.
To learn more about this topic, visit diaglobal.org.